Hurricane Helene leaves the Southeast completely devastated, and the mainstream media and the government is nowhere to be found. We are going to cover what is actually happening in the Southeast from the Southeast, something our government agencies refuse to do. Let's get into it. Welcome to the 27th episode of the Magnifying Glass Podcast. I'm your host, Elena Moore. This week, we're going to be covering the devastation of Hurricane Helene and what is left in South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Florida. Many are still without power and cannot leave their homes. Thousands are missing and hundreds are dead. Helene was underreported by the mainstream media platforms, and it changed its course last minute from what was being predicted. We're going to take a few looks of what it looks like right now in Western North Carolina. Now, these are just videos that are coming out that you're seeing on your screen if you're watching by video platform. There are thousands of bodies that are being pulled from cars, houses, rivers, and other areas in Western North Carolina that we're hearing about. The mainstream media has confirmed some of these deaths that they're confirming are currently a couple hundred, and it's rising very rapidly. People that live in the area are saying that there are thousands that are missing. I saw on Facebook there's people even talking about it being upwards to 13,000. Of course, we don't really know because there's not much of a government response to it. And the little that we are seeing is coming several days after the devastation. You can see some of the mudslides in these videos where it is just rapidly coming in. Chimney Rock was one of the towns in Western North Carolina that was completely wiped out. We see a lot of the devastation as well in Asheville and Black Mountain, where houses were floating down the road. I mean, some of the videos, it's just, we've never seen of before. South Carolina, where I'm from, where I'm seeing a lot of different things and a lot of people that I know are being affected. My co-founder of Palmetto State Watch is seeing a lot of that firsthand of where the eye hit in Aiken. South Carolina has reported more outages than any state, reaching well over a million. Over the weekend, I believe it was hitting about 1.4 or 1.6 million. Those numbers are decreasing by the time that I'm filming this episode, which is Monday, September 30th. Governor Henry McMaster of South Carolina held a press conference on Monday that I just completed watching. The head, I believe, of the South Carolina National Guard stated that over 600 National Guard were deployed and they're calling in other states. He said that we sent helicopters to North Carolina and we're bringing in airmen from Florida to South Carolina and is now sending personnel to counties. That's something that I've asked a lot of people about in South Carolina. I have not seen any National Guard or State Guard. I haven't really seen any government response in South Carolina. Of course, they're talking about it on social media and McMaster has been taking photos in helicopters. But when it comes down to it, in all of the places and all of the people I've talked to, they are not seeing one member from the government, from the military. Really, it's just been linemen and locals that are helping out each other. That's what we're really seeing going on here, is that you're not going to get help from the federal government, it seems, until after it's too late. If, and that's a big if, we see a response. We're not seeing much. We're seeing local law enforcement. We're seeing local emergencies, operations. But we're seeing mostly locals helping out locals. In South Carolina, Aiken, Augusta, Greenwood, and Greenville have probably received the most impact in South Carolina, it seems. But many parts of the Midlands were also hit very badly. I'm going to show you a few photos from Saturday and Sunday, so September the 28th and the 29th. This photo is from September 28th in Aiken of the gas line for Sam's Club. And then you're going to see a video from Sunday, September 29th of the line into Sam's Club as well and a neighboring gas station. They're well over an hour, most likely in the 2 to 3 hour range is what we're hearing from a lot of locals. The photos are even worse of the trees and the devastation to people's property and their houses. Gas is going extremely quickly in South Carolina right now. Places in Aiken and the upstate who were hit the worst are coming to other areas like Columbia and surrounding outside of that, even to Charleston. It's becoming very difficult to get gas. On Sunday, I went out to probably 8 different gas stations roundabout in the Northeast Columbia to find gas. Most of them were closed down. We're seeing a lot more closing down today. On Monday, those in Charleston are even saying that the gas is being depleted very quickly. By the time this episode releases, who knows what gas is going to be left if it is not replenished. All of these things that I'm telling you are facts. You're not going to be seeing it from the mainstream media. I don't know why they're not reporting it. Some of the local stations are, not everything. The national media is the one that is worrying the most. Wouldn't you think that millions and millions of people in the Southeast who are losing their lives, losing their homes, losing everything that they own, that would be something to cover, wouldn't it? It doesn't seem that important, apparently, to the United States. I went to the Congaree River on Sunday, took a few photos that you're going to be seeing. These were taken at 3:30 p.m. on September the 29th, Sunday, excuse me. I'm going to show you a few photos from the Congaree River from 3:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. You see it has risen probably 18 inches at the least, maybe a couple feet more than that. Just so everybody knows, the Congaree River is fed by both the Saluda River and the Broad River. And a lot of these rivers go up into the upstate and into North Carolina. Now, North Carolina took on a ton of water. They were not expecting that. While some may be in floodplains, you don't really expect for the mountains of Tennessee and the mountains of North Carolina to receive such a harsh impact from a hurricane. But they did. A lot of the dams are breaking in the area. We saw the one near the Biltmore Estates flooded the area. There's college students stuck in Appalachian State University who all of the cell towers were down. They're slowly, I think, being put back up, but many people cannot even get in contact with their loved ones. They don't know if they're alive or dead. We saw that same thing happen in Augusta and Aiken as well. The phone lines went down for a lot of different people, maybe not everybody, but for a lot of people who could not get out of their houses, let alone contact and tell anybody that they were safe, or if they weren't. The Congaree River is expected to hit the same historic numbers of the 2015 100-year flood. I think it's hilarious how they called it the 100-year flood, since it was supposed to happen 100 years, and here we are 9 years later, seeing the same numbers hitting the same marks. They evacuated the city of Casey in certain areas and certain neighborhoods that were going to be impacted by the flooding of the Congaree. And the water that goes from there usually goes into the Santee River down by Charleston and McClellanville areas. If another storm hits, it could get so much worse than the current disaster already is. The South Carolina state response over this whole thing has been comical at best. It's embarrassing to see that while South Carolina boasts of so many resources, they've spent the past few years, especially McMaster and many other elected officials, bringing in foreign entities, giving them as much free money and billions of dollars that they want to come in to use our resources and our land. While we can't even provide for our own people during a hurricane disaster. And it's not as if we're living in the mountains and not expecting to be hit. We experience hurricanes every single year. Wouldn't you think that McMaster and the state of South Carolina would be prepared for that? Instead of sending the little bit of resources we have to other states, maybe sending it to our own people and helping them out? Oh, but no. We can't do that. We must rely on Florida for their military and their National Guardsmen to help out. It's really embarrassing, and it's a sorry state for South Carolina to be in right now. Shooting and looting has begun over the weekend. It didn't take long for people to start eating their own. Several reports out of Augusta and Aiken stating that grocery stores, ice machines are being looted, that guns are being pulled at gas stations. I'm not being alarmist here. You can see it for yourself. The media is not reporting it, but you can go on Facebook. I think I did one little search when I had a few people tell me about their experiences, did one search and saw at least 10 to 20 different instances of people confirming it in their areas. Similar reports are also coming out of North Carolina. Here's one video that is going viral right now of a young man begging for help in North Carolina.
Hurricane Helene hit Leicester, North Carolina about 2 days ago. The local news is covering it, but the big news is not. A lot of people do not know what's going on. We are without food, without water. Gas stations are out. There's no electricity. It's a war zone. It's literally a war zone. Looting is going crazy. It's everywhere. Police are not responding to missing person calls anymore. They're only responding to big emergencies. The Walmart down the road on Bleachery just got flooded out where I work. There's nothing there. It's a war zone. There's flooding everywhere. Houses have been swept away. There's houses floating down the river. Cars are gone. We need help. We need help. And we need to get the word around. We need help, please.
Here is another woman that has family trapped in Spruce Pine, North Carolina for 4 days, and what she had to say about the response to the area.
Do you think the government is doing enough?
Honestly, I don't know how you did not have a formal press conference or something from either President Biden or Kamala Harris. I mean, how do you not say anything for 4 days? They've been stranded for 4 days, and this is the first we've heard from them at all. FEMA is not on the ground there at all. They are not in these cities. Not in these towns and not in these villages.
Does your relative have food? Does she have water? Does she have the medication she needs?
They have a minimal amount of water. They have a minimal amount of food. They were able to get slightly down the mountain to get a little bit of gas, but they haven't been able to cut their way out yet.
When you say cut their way out, what do you mean?
There's trees down. You have to have chainsaws up there to get the trees out of the roads. And that is if the mudslides didn't take the roads out completely. I could not even tell you how many families, even here outside of Charlotte, that are looking for their loved ones up in that area. No one knows anything.
We can give money to Ukraine and Israel, billions and billions of dollars regularly, but we can't support our own people in their time of need. Here are two clips that were 3 days apart. On Thursday, September 26, Biden announced $2.6 billion for a long-term assistance package in aid to Ukraine. 3 days later, on Sunday, September 29, Biden made his first public statement and said that the federal government is giving everything they have and was working on the ground. Biden was asked by the reporter if there are any other resources that he could provide. What was his answer? No. We've given everything, even though they haven't asked for it yet.
I'm proud to announce a new $2.4 billion package of security assistance. We've given them everything we have. We're on the ground ahead of time, so we're working hard.
Are there any more resources the federal government could be giving them?
No, we have pre-planned a significant amount of it, even though they didn't ask for it yet.
Okay, let's step back for a second. He said, even though they hadn't asked for it yet. He said this on Sunday, September 29th. Well, let's look at the North Carolina governor's statement, Roy Cooper. He requested federal aid on Friday, September 27th, right when the disaster was happening. South Carolina Governor McMaster sent a request in on Saturday, September 28th. But on Sunday, Biden's claiming that there's boots on the ground and he's already provided assistance that hasn't been asked for? Well, I've spoken with several individuals, and every single one of them, including a lot of the videos that are going viral right now, every single person is saying they haven't seen anyone from the government. You know who they have seen? The local individuals around them helping out in most cases, not all cases. But if you're seeing any help being given, it's really by local emergency individuals and linemen and locals and neighbors that live near each other. So I decided to see, okay, how much money did we send to Ukraine earlier? 3 days before Hurricane Helene hit? Well, according to the state.gov website, to date, they have provided more than $61.3 billion in military assistance since Russia launched its premeditated, unprovoked, and brutal full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, and approximately $64.1 billion in military assistance since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2014. They say, it stayed on here that we have now used the emergency presidential drawdown authority on 53 occasions since August of 2021 and provide Ukraine military assistance totaling approximately $31.2 billion from DOD stockpiles. So you do the math of how much money they've spent on Ukraine. That's not including the billions of dollars that we continue to send to Israel on a regular basis as well. Biden held a press conference on Monday, which is September 30th, and said that we're not leaving until the job's done. Again, where are you leaving from? That's an honest question. Where are you leaving from? Because we're not seeing anything. He said he is being told he cannot visit the area because it would divert the responses or delay responses to the area, which, again, hilarious since we're not seeing any responses whatsoever. He continues on and says, we will be there with you as long as it takes. Where? He says he takes it very seriously. I don't know. At least to me, I don't feel like you can really take a disaster such as this one seriously when you're sitting on a beach. You're supposed to be the leader of the free world when you're just leading the next time you're sitting on a beach. At the end of the press conference, I find that this is really where it gets interesting. At the end of the press conference, a reporter, as Biden is walking out, asks why he and Kamala were not in D.C. commanding this disaster. This is his response.
Drawn to retaliate.
I'm a hurricane, Mr. President. Why weren't you and Vice President Harris here in Washington commanding this weekend?
I was commanding. I was on the phone for at least 2 hours yesterday and the day before as well. I command. It's called a telephone. Is it all my security people?
Is it not important for the country to see?
Well, where is everybody? That's a great question. Well, on Thursday, September 26th, the day Hurricane Helene was beginning to make landfall, more than 700 Tennessee National Guard were sent to the Middle East. Because don't worry, you're not important. The other side of the world is more important. The state and the federal government response is embarrassing. I mean, if this doesn't tell you where the priorities lie, I don't know what's going to. The only way victims have received any help, as we have stated, has been through local emergency facilities, linemen, local groups and nonprofits, and especially even the private aviation community who have used their own helicopters, gas, money, and time to rescue people and bring food and water to those who are stranded and have nothing. Roads are completely destroyed. But don't worry. Biden and your governor says they're coming to help. FEMA, on the other hand, is nowhere to be found. But never fear, the number one goal on their website is equity and diversity. How diverse and equitable does FEMA feel now? Let's take a closer look at Biden's comment on Sunday.
You have the awards for the victims of the hurricane?
Yes, it's tragic. As a matter of fact, we're trying to get the exact number. My FEMA advisor is on the ground in Florida right now. There's a distinction between the numbers that FEMA's used and the ones that are used by the locals. So it really is amazing. You saw the photographs. It's stunning.
It's unbelievable. But it really is. Such a wide area.
And we've given them all everything that we have. We're on the ground ahead of time. So we're working hard.
Are there any more resources the federal government could be giving them?
No, we've given them, we have pre-planned a significant amount of it, even though they didn't ask for it yet, hadn't asked for it yet.
Apparently, the numbers are different from FEMA and the locals. Maybe that's because FEMA's not there. But don't worry, the photos are stunning. He's not going to check it out, but it's stunning. Meanwhile, Trump has already sent millions of dollars and is currently in Georgia right now on Monday, speaking with locals and delivering aid and resources. It's almost as if he's doing the job the current federal government should be doing. This is not the only disaster that is currently going on, but yesterday on Sunday, it was announced that a chemical plant in Georgia exploded. You'll see some of the videos coming up right now. On Monday, there was a shelter-in-place order for Rockdale County where the explosion happened. That has been extended indefinitely. So don't worry, not only can you not drink your water or find any food in the grocery stores or get any gas at the gas station, but your air is also getting poisoned as well. Seems like a coincidence, I guess. Or maybe not. To make matters worse, there's possible storms brewing on both the Atlantic and in the Gulf. Now, we don't know where they're going to go, but I'd rather be safe than sorry and tell y'all about it now, before it's too late. At least two storms are forming in the Atlantic, far out currently, and one seems to be forming in the exact location Helene came from. Anything can change, but it's just going to take a little bit more rain to finish off many of the dams in North Carolina and South Carolina that are currently preventing hundreds, if not thousands, of homes from being flooded. Now, I'm not going to go too deep into this, but since we're on the topic, it needs to be mentioned. This seems extremely planned with the way it hit. And we do know that weather modifications do exist. Here's a list of at least 100 U.S. patents related to weather modifications that were posted from ZeroGeoEngineering.com on September 2017. As you can see, the first one was filed on July 16, 1891. There was a patent for a hurricane and tornado control device filed in 2001. A patent for controlling hurricanes by raising temperatures in the eye and in the outflow that was filed in 2009. This just takes a little bit of research to look at. These are all on Google, mind you. You can type in weather modifications and these patents are going to be the first things that pull up for you. So it may sound crazy now if you haven't looked into it, but I highly encourage you to do that, especially if there's more storms on the horizon. Because for me personally, I don't believe in coincidences. especially when we get into the meat and the nitty-gritty about it all. Cloud seeding, for one, is a weather modification technique that enhances precipitations from clouds and creation of clouds that was first conceived after World War II and was used in the Vietnam War in the 60s. You may believe that this one wasn't created, but that doesn't mean they don't use these patents. But if you would like to hear more of that, I can do a deep dive. Just let me know. Even by looking at this right now, I did a couple of searches and we're finding White House annual reports from the 60s about all of the new weather modification abilities that they have and how they can use hurricanes, tornadoes, and cloud seeding, just to name a few. So one thing when I was doing my research, a lot of this felt really familiar. Being and living from the Southeast my entire life, I've lived through a lot of hurricanes. I've seen a lot of disasters. This one is odd, I would say, out of all of the rest. It reminded me a little bit of the destruction of Maui, and I started seeing a lot of people say the same things as well, asking the questions, is this Maui 2.0? Well, when the podcast launched last year, our first episode covered the destruction of Maui. There is a lot that we can learn from it, as we are seeing similar patterns play out in the destruction of the Southeast. As you may remember, Maui was announced to become the first smart island a month before the massive fires began burning Lahaina to the ground. Many of the cities and towns that were destroyed by Helene have either announced that they will be a smart city or they are building and implementing smart initiatives. But just real quickly, a reminder of what a smarter 15-minute city is. Well, the World Economic Forum talks about it a lot. Shocker, who saw that one coming? A smart city is an urban area that has been developed with a high level of technological advancement, utilizing a variety of electronic methods and sensors to collect specific data. You can pull that one right off of the World Economic Forum or Wikipedia or really any of all the other several pages dedicated to convincing you how great a smart city is. Now, they're also called 15-minute cities. Why is that? Because if you live in a smart city where the government would love for you to live, you can walk 15 minutes everywhere. You'll have a smart meter on your house so that the government can control how much airflow and the power that you're receiving. California uses them a lot when they're having rolling blackouts or brownouts to try and control the power. It's also huge in the electric vehicle initiatives. They don't want you relying on diesel to get where you are. They want to be able to track exactly where you go and cut it off if they don't want you to go anywhere. China implements a lot of these policies with their social card policies. If you do something wrong that the government or your local agencies don't agree with, you get scored badly and you can't buy groceries at the grocery store. I saw a lot of people saying, well, is this storm hitting because it's an attack on red states that are going to be voting for Trump? That's a possibility. I could definitely see that happening to limit the amount of votes. But I think it's more sinister than that. As we stated, electric vehicle initiatives are one of the key components to growing a smart city, keeping everybody in their local areas where they're all under your thumb, and using a chip and vaccine passports to enter into any establishment. One of the ways that I've spoken a lot about the electric vehicle initiative that McMaster has instituted in the state of South Carolina, bringing in foreign global entities, giving them billions of dollars, land, building it for them. A piece of that is lithium mining. Now, lithium mining, these are both, by the way, initiatives in both Tennessee, North Carolina, and South Carolina. It just happens to be the places where Hurricane Helene hit the hardest. Several companies in North Carolina are actively and exploring and developing lithium mining projects, in particular to Piedmont Lithium and Albemarle Corporation. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but you get the idea. Tennessee has also similar projects, and South Carolina as well. I believe I've spoken about them a few. It feels like every single week we have a new electric vehicle company foreign company that comes into South Carolina, rolling out the red carpet for them by the South Carolina government. And you need lithium batteries to run electric vehicles. Some of the smart cities that have been confirmed in South Carolina has been Greenville and surrounding areas. We see that other places like Spartanburg, Asheville, Augusta, Aiken, and their surrounding areas have been announced similar initiatives into their areas. It's really scary when you start looking at all of the facts of both the devastation and the plans that have been in the works since around 2017. That's where a lot of these smart initiatives we saw Blumen announce in South Carolina. It's not new. It's been here. We're just now figuring it out. Maui was announced to be a smart island. South Carolina, Tennessee, and North Carolina seems to be trying to make similar moves, or at least the people in that area that are linked to the WEF are going to do it for them. If you take anything from this episode, I want you to take one thing. When disaster strikes, the government is not coming to save you. You have yourself and God, and hopefully your family, and at most you have your community. However, we are seeing very quickly what it looks like when a community begins turning on itself and eating its own. You need to have a generator with gas or some form of power that is not reliant on the power grid. We saw many houses that had solar hookups, but unfortunately those solar hookups were integrated with the power grid so they couldn't use it. You need to have another form of energy, and at the very least, you need to have some food stores. It doesn't have to be a large financial investment to have a couple of cans of beans in your cabinet. We see what happens when the power goes out and remains out for an indeterminable amount of time. Groceries and gas are the first to go. And after 24 hours of destruction, it's not the place that you want to be. Just because it's not on the news doesn't mean it's not happening. I hope the Southeast takes this as a lesson and learns from it before the next form of disaster strikes, because it could be much sooner than you realize. I know we have hit some really heavy topics today, but let me know what your comments are. I want to know your feedback on all of this. I'll keep you updated. You can follow my personal account on X at Authentic Elena, and you can also follow Palmetto State Watch as well for updates as they're coming in on social media. Thank you for joining us today on the Magnifying Glass podcast. We delve deep, bringing the overlooked into focus and magnifying the stories that matter to you. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and share, helping us shine a light on even more discoveries. I'm your host, Elena Moore, and remember, sometimes the smallest details make the biggest difference. Until next time, keep looking closer.